The king of Abyssinia once took a British subject named Cameron, and he was taken prisoner and incarcerated in the high fortress of Magdala. Well, no cause was assigned for his unexpected confinement. Well, this is years ago, but when Great Britain found out that this had occurred, they demanded the immediate release of their citizen. Well, King Theodore refused, and within 10 days of his refusal, 10,000 British soldiers were sailing down the coast for the country there and for the fortress. Then marching across a very unfriendly country for 700 miles, they went up into the mountains to where the prisoner was being held. A tremendous battle ensued. They tore the gates of the fortress down, reached the depths of the dungeon. They lifted their own British subject out, placed him on their shoulders, and carried him down the mountains to the coast where a big ocean vessel sped him safely home. This expedition took several months, cost at that time $25 million. The entire resources of the government had been made available for the rescue of one British citizen. Pretty amazing when you think about that. But you know, as much as we stand in awe of that moment, we have all of the resources of heaven to protect us. And that is a thrilling thought. And that's what I want to focus on today, is the reality of God's protection for every believer. This comes out of our theme of fearless, out of Isaiah chapter 41, verse 10, our theme verse, "Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God." See how personal that is. "I will strengthen thee." We looked at that last week. "Yea, I will help thee." That's our focus today. "Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness." That little word "help" is a wonderful word. It means to surround, to protect, or to give aid. And God has promised to do that for the believer. The Old Testament is a tremendous illustration of how God takes care of individual believers. The way the New Testament interprets the Old when it comes to us spiritually is how God worked with the nation of Israel as an entire nation parallels the principles of how he works with us as an individual believer. So I'd like you to turn with me to Exodus chapter 17, as we're going to see an event early in the national history of the nation of Israel. They had been delivered from through the Exodus from Egypt, and God had done the mighty miracles, the plagues, and then they had had the miracle of the Red Sea. But immediately they began to show their immaturity and their need for development and growth. And they came to a place in which the water was bitter, and they started to grumble, and God sweetened the water. Then they got hungry, and they murmured and complained, and God gave them manna and quail. And that leads us now to chapter 17, as he again is going to be teaching these people and really teaching us how God will take care of us and some key principles in our spiritual development and growth. Beginning with verse 1. "And all the congregation of the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys, according to the commandment of the Lord, and pitched in Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink." I want to look at, first of all, the place of protection. Now, this is very important right now, with all the uncertainties that we have, all of the turmoil. I would think everyone here has gone through much turmoil of soul in the last several weeks, and the last week in particular. And we need to understand that God is very aware of where he allows us to go and what is happening in our lives. I want you to note here that as we look at the place of protection, that the congregation of the children of Israel had journeyed out from the Red Sea. They were in the wilderness of Sin, and they were continuing to be in that really all the way to Sinai. And they moved according to the commandment of the Lord. Now, this is very interesting. We need to yield to divine leadership and believe that God's will is best, but we need to understand that divine leadership does not necessarily lead us to the oasis we always want to be at. So easy for us as believers to look at our Christianity from a selfish perspective and to just expect that when we do right, something good's going to happen. Let me just say, every time by faith you trust God and do right, a lot of good things happen. But in the process of that, remember, every step of faith is followed by what? Tribulation. Faith works tribulation, and tribulation continues the spiritual growth, and that's exactly what God was doing for these people. And so they were brought to a place that was not their idea to go to. God, through the fiery pillar and the glorious cloud, led them to this exact place, and there was no water there. Does that remind you of another situation they were in just a week or so before? They had been brought to the Red Sea. They didn't have to come to the coast of the Red Sea, but God led them there, and here come the Egyptian armies. And this was going to be an opportunity for God to show a deliverance that they would never forget. Now, folks, God's leadership leads you to situations in which you will learn his great power, you will learn your need for him, and you will see his glory through his deliverance. Oftentimes, his leadership is not initially that great blessing. It brings you to the spiritual growth of blessing and brings you to landmarks in your life that will be great stabilizing factors as you're growing in the Lord. Well, that's what happened here. No water. Now, think of probably a couple million people, all the flocks. You know, food's one thing, but folks, water's a big deal. It would take quite a water system to be able to have enough water for that large of a crowd. And so if there's no water there and they're out in the wilderness, this was legitimately a concern, though the response was not right. So God allowed that to happen. Now, folks, I just want to encourage us to realize that we must follow the Lord even if it seems like it's not working. God's word is true. God's leadership is right. And we must understand that his will is that which must be done regardless of whether or not it seems to be working the way we want it to work. Now, right now, and we're going to see this in just a minute, there are a lot of frustrated believers. Is God on the throne? Is God working? Well, I believe that this is why I picked this chapter. I think if you'll look at it, you'll see the ramifications of it. And so, first of all, let me just say, as we look at this, they yielded to divine leadership, and it was going to be for great blessing and development in their lives. We need to be on the same kind of a sense of following God's leadership as General Pershing was when he placed the American army under the command of General Foch, the commander of all Allied forces. And that was not an easy thing for him to do, but he made that famous statement, "Infantry, artillery, aviation, all that we have are yours. Dispose of them as you will." And I just want to say, as believers and as a church, we need to say, "Lord, everything we have, everything we are, all of the assets that we have, we are putting them at your disposal and use us as you will." Not as we want or as we think God's will is going to be. We need to be honestly willing to let God do what he needs to do to change us. Now, we've been saying this for some time, and many of you have said the same thing, but folks, I think we're all aware of the dramatic need for spiritual growth within the Christian church in these days. And the problems in our nation are directly because of the lack of power in the Church of the Living God. Now, God knows what he's doing. I don't know how everything's going to turn out, but I just want you to know that God may be bringing us into a wilderness where it seems like there's no water, but whenever God does that, he is ready to do some things that will teach us lessons and change us by his power and show forth his glory. And we need to believe that as a corporate whole, and we need to believe that in our individual lives. We've got to follow the Lord. And we got to be very careful that we do not get bitter and frustrated, but we need to overcome bitterness in difficulty. Look at with me at verse 2. Wherefore the people did chide with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said unto them, "Why chide ye with me? Wherefore do ye tempt the Lord?" And the people thirsted there for water, and the people murmured against Moses and said, "Wherefore is this that thou hast brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst?" And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, "What shall I do unto this people? They be almost ready to stone me." And the Lord said unto Moses, "Go on before the people and take with thee of the elders of Israel and thy rod wherewith thou smotest the river, and take it in thy hand and go. Behold, I will stand before thee there upon the rock in Horeb," that's another name for Sinai, "and thou shalt smite the rock, and there shall come forth water out of it, that the people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. Now, what happens is, when we think we're following the Lord, or when we are following the Lord, and things don't go our way, we begin questioning and arguing with God. Now, it's fine for us to talk with the Lord with a trusting spirit, but not with a negative spirit. And he is saying here, he says, "Wherefore are you tempting the Lord?" Moses is responding. This greatly grieved him, because they said, "Why did you lead us?" Moses didn't lead them there. They knew good and well that the glorious cloud had done it, but immediately they're just looking at the closest person to them, and they're frustrated. Now again, I have human sympathy. Being extremely thirsty and not knowing where water is going to be is a big deal. Little children and so forth. It was a big deal, but their attitude was a rebellious, untrusting attitude. In their desperation, they went to frustration instead of to God. You notice the difference between the people and Moses. What did the people do? They argued. It was a back and forth argument. What did Moses do? Went directly to the Lord, where the solution is. Now, folks, we've got to be very careful about blame, 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 blame. There's lots of folks we can blame right now for all of our frustrations, right? That's not the attitude of a godly Christian. Now, we can be concerned, and we can be grieved, and we can be very informed, and we can understand where our country is headed. But it doesn't do any good for us to be blaming, going around blaming anyone at this point. This is where we need to trust the Lord. And so he's saying, you're putting the Lord to the test. This is a very, very important point, in that it's a lack of faith. Folks, you don't believe God after he proves himself. You believe him before he does, because it's in his word. Now, it's wonderful after he delivers. It's easier the next time. And your faith turns to confidence, hope. But the key to faith is not to wait for God to prove himself. Just trust him for who he is and what he said, and follow his will, even though it seems difficult. You don't wait for an airplane to prove itself to you before you fly in it. There's no way for you to figure out that specific plane is as worthy as they say it is. You're going to have to take the company, and you're going to have to take the government's word for it that is a safe plane, and you by faith get on that plane, right? And that's exactly what happens when we are following the leadership of the Lord. Psalm 78:56, "Yet they tempted and provoked the Most High God and kept not his testimonies." And so it's a Deuteronomy, when Moses was preparing them to go in the land 40 years later, he said, "Ye shall not tempt the Lord your God as ye tempted him in Massah," referring to this situation. So tempting the Lord is to wait to see his power before you trust him. Faith is trusting him, and then you see his power. That's why people don't get saved, because they're looking for something instead of just believing that what God says about what Jesus did is how you come to know Christ. And I'm telling you, friends, many a believer goes very, very short distance in their Christian life because they're constantly tempting the Lord, not willing to trust him, that his way, his truths are right, from our personal lives to our families to our priorities and in every area of life. And so it's very important that we understand that. And I think it's so instructive here that it's Moses as the leader, he went to the Lord. He said, "Lord, what do I do?" You know, this was a tough spot. In fact, you can sense the reaction of Moses here. He realizes the unbelief, the rebellion, the lack of trust that is involved in this whole confrontation. And so he went to the Lord, and of course, the Lord was going to protect. He was not going to let them go without water. He was going to meet the needs. He's promised to do that. And so all he had to do was ask for wisdom, and God gave it to him. Every spiritual leader needs to, on behalf of whatever group he is leading, at times of crisis, be the one to go to the Lord and get the answer. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. We certainly want the full counsel of our wives, and we need every bit of that, but there is a time in which men have to believe God, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. These are going to be our priorities. We're going to believe God here. And then, Lord, how do we meet the financial need? How do we, as we give or as we sacrifice or as we do the things that you've led us to do, how are you going to work? And I'm telling you, every husband here will get answers from God, just like Moses did. Every father needs to show their children that they can go to God and get water from the rock. I'm telling you, it's important. Every family ought to be a family of miracles. There ought to be a heritage, not just from church, so that should be obviously happening all the time. But you ought to be able to have your children look back and give illustrations. You know, my father met with God and God worked. Instead of, my father grumbled all the time. My father was in despair all the time. He was depressed all the time. He was always wondering where God was. You know, I think dads, if we would just look at our examples, we would understand the direction our children are going. They need a father that really does know how to go to God. Every spiritual leader, every Bible study leader, every one of us as pastors, we've got to know the mind of God and be able to find where the water and the rock is, because there is always God's protection. There is always God's provision. God is on the throne. His kingdom is moving forward. He won the victory at the cross. We are not to be wringing our hands. We are not to be griping and grumbling. We can't be all spitting and fuming about what's happening right now in our country. Some of the greatest days ahead for the church will be the days ahead if we'll be what we ought to be. And so it's important for us in leadership to know how to get to God. And I'll tell you, what God gives is just a wonderful thing. He gives his very presence. If you look with me at verse 7, and he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah. That Massah means testing. Meribah means contention, protest, strife. because of the chiding of the children of Israel, and because they tempted the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Now, frankly, that was a pretty ridiculous statement. All they had to do is look, and there was the cloudy pillar, there was the fiery pillar. Is his presence? Well, there it is. The plagues, the Red Sea, it's just been weeks before, and they'd forgotten it. Think of all that God's done for us, and then we say, "Where's our God?" Same place he's always been. The question is, where are you? And where am I when it comes to our heart And I tell you, when we trust the Lord, he will always be there. I love this, what a little child said. A teacher read to her class the text, "My yoke is easy." Can anybody tell me what a yoke is? And a little boy said, "A yoke is something they put on the necks of animals." Then the teacher asked, "Well, what is the yoke God puts on us?" And the little girl said, "It is God putting his arms around our necks." I thought, you know, that's exactly right. As God gives us responsibilities, puts us in his will, he's right there. Just like a father teaching his child, just like a mother working with her daughter, just like anyone who is lovingly trying to develop someone, they're right there. Their presence is there. And so, folks, I got good news for you. Jesus is here right now. God is where he's always been. All is right with the world when it comes to God and his kingdom. It's the issue is we've got to serve him. Are we willing to be placed in a desert with no water? Are we willing to follow God to impossibilities? Are we willing to let him put us in places where it seems like there's no way out? Because that's where he's going to teach us. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to provide for you. You're going to have to walk by faith. Those are some of the most glorious moments in a Christian's life when they face the impossible. And let me just then get to the second point, the power for protection. Let me just quickly talk about this matter of the battle here. And this was the whole idea, the help, the surrounding, the protection of God. Then came Amalek, verse 8, and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said unto Joshua, "Choose us out men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in mine hand." So Joshua did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses and Aaron and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And it came to pass when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him. And he sat thereon, and Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, the one on the one side and the other on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Now, this was a very important moment. Amalek was related to Israel. This is Esau's grandson that started this people group. They lived in the north part of the Sinai Peninsula and in what's called the Negev. That's the southern part of Israel. And they were the first of the nations to come against Israel as a nation. And this is very interesting. And God would not forget that. In fact, you read in Deuteronomy 25 how Moses said, "Remember what Amalek did unto thee, and how he met thee by the way and smote the hindmost of thee, even all that were feeble behind thee, when thou wast faint and weary." In other words, it was a terrible atrocity that Amalek started as they were there in that vulnerable place in Rephidim. And so this was going to be a people group that God was going to deal with. And why they came after Israel way down south here, I don't know. I think that there was animosity in their hearts. They should have known that God was with Israel, that God had promised Canaan, not the Negev, not Sinai Peninsula to Israel, but the land of Canaan. But they were raiders. They were a fierce people coming out of that Edom background. And so they come against Israel here. And they were definitely superior militarily. Can you imagine the state that Israel was in? They'd never been trained as an army. They had been slaves. Joshua probably had helped try to train them somewhat. Moses had been a general, so he understood what the Egyptian fighting practices were, but there was no time to develop these people. And how many swords and spears and all do you think Egypt let them have? They didn't have a lot of weaponry. It was probably just crude types of weapons that they could do there in the wilderness. So they had no human ability to battle the Amalek tribe. And this was something that was a very serious matter. By the way, it's a great picture. When Satan comes after us, we're in the will of God, we're endeavoring to do right, we face impossibilities, we can't do it. That's why we shrink back. That's why we don't want to fully follow God in different areas of just evangelism and other areas and doing right in our families and following and with right priorities, because we know in and of ourselves we can do nothing. And that's exactly where the Israelites were. But the believer's responsibility here, I want to quickly look at, was the fact that they, Israel here is a picture of a believer, obeyed leadership. Joshua picked out the men. It's not that he picked out just a small group of men out of a fighting force. He just picked out the men that could fight and have some kind of a weapon. It was a motley crew for sure. And so they followed the Lord under Joshua's leadership, and they actively engaged the enemy, and we're going to see, depending upon God. Now, friends, when we are in a position where God says, move forward, and we say, how can we? We've got to be very careful, not only to wait till God proves himself, but to wait till we think that we've got that somehow God's going to zap us and make us be able to do what we need to do. When should obedience occur? Immediately. It's when we take a step of faith and obedience, that's when the power comes. Now, I like this. Joshua said, yes, sir. These men evidently said, yes, sir. Even in the midst of what they had just been through, God's spirit touched them, and they went against an enemy they could not overcome themselves, but they actively engaged the enemy depending upon God. I tell you what, a lot could be done if we would follow that example. And when we put God to the right kind of test, he really works. 1 Timothy 6:12, fight the good fight of faith, lay hold on eternal life, wherein unto thou art also called and hath professed a good profession among many witnesses. And Paul ended his life using that same terminology in 2 Timothy 4:7. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. So many believers blame God because somehow they just didn't get what they needed to be obedient and to see God work. No, we have a will. We have the word. We have the Spirit of God that tells us what to do. We have to take the step of faith, and that's when God steps in. If you want to live a God-sized life, you've got to take those steps of impossibility when God leads you into the wilderness and it doesn't seem like it's going to work, but you do what God tells you to do. It's an amazing thing. And they depended upon the Lord. That beautiful picture of Moses. He, whenever his hands went above the head, his head, it signified that he was trusting God. And by the way, for him to have to do that shows that Israel couldn't have won that battle. Israel proved they couldn't do it. You remember the next time they battled the Amalekites? When they disobeyed at Kadesh Barnea? And went ahead and battled the Amalekites anyway, they got slaughtered. Without God, they were nothing. With God, every time, I mean, of course, Moses, with Aaron and Hur's help, kept his hands up. By the way, it wasn't because Moses was getting old and feeble. He died in full strength. Try holding your hands up for a while. You get them over your head. It's not long, and that gets wearisome. Now, some of the best exercise you can do is with your arms above your heart, just because of the strain of it. But it was a picture of trusting the Lord, and that staff was there signifying the power of God. And as he sat there up on that hill, God came down and slew the Amalekites. Folks, listen, we can wring our hands right now. And I don't know exactly what to pray for, but I'm telling you, if God's people will raise their hands to heaven and do right and stop just living the good American life, but really let God take part of every other life and let God lead them and to move forward, God can change the equation and move in a moment. He can defeat the enemy. And we need to pray that he will. But so often as Psalm 20, verse 7 says, Some trust in chariots, some in horses, but we will remember the name of the Lord our God. Isaiah 31:1, woe to them that go down to Egypt for help. Stay on horses and trust in chariots because they are many, and in horsemen because they're very strong, but they look not unto the Holy One of Israel, neither seek the Lord. So folks, God was teaching these people, if you'll believe me, even though it seems impossible, that's when I'm going to work. You can trust me. I will always provide. He provided the water. He provided the food. And I will always protect. He will. God will do what is best for each one of us, and God will do what's best for his people at large. And then just the final point, I'm just going to mention at the last two verses, he proclaimed the protection. Verse 14, and the Lord said unto Moses, write this for a memorial in a book and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua, for I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called it Jehovah Nissi. And he said, because the Lord hath sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. We need to verbalize what God has done. I'm telling you, like Dr. Kittrell, the old prayer warrior, some of you remember him. The good old country preacher that was a preacher in Indianapolis, of all places, and won hundreds of people to Christ. But he would say, if God does it, I'm going to tell it. He didn't worry about being proud. That wasn't his whole point. He wanted God to get the glory. He wanted to witness what God had done. Folks, we ought to be able to tell to our children. We ought to be able to tell to everybody around us, God is working. God is answering prayer. God is on the move. I'll tell it. In Judges 5:11, they were to rehearse the righteous acts of the Lord. That was very important. And, and that's, you take, for instance, Andrew Murray, the great pastor of South Africa at the turn of the last century. All of his children, it's amazing how many, five became pastors and four became pastor's wife. The next generation, they had 10 grandsons were pastors and 13 were missionaries. What was the secret? Andrew Murray was writing and talking all the time about what God had done. They had a great God. And by the way, you notice here, he said, tell Joshua. Why tell Joshua? Because he wanted the next generation to know and to remember. And remember too, Amalek will never win. They won at Kadesh Barnea, but eventually Israel was supposed to get rid of the enemy. And that was God's curse upon them. And so we need to tell the next generation what God has done. And then we need to make that altar publicly memorialize God's victory. Jehovah Nissi, the Lord is my banner. The Lord is my rallying point. Oh, I tell you, when Paul and Silas, Barnabas came back from the first journey, Acts 14:27, and when they were come and had gathered the church together, they rehearsed all that God had done unto them and how he had opened the door of faith unto the Gentiles. We ought to have memorials in our homes. We ought to have places that we point out to our children. We need to have situations where this is a symbol of what God has done. We don't build altars as such today, but we ought to have places that are places of great remembrance. Some years ago, a policeman was walking his beat in Chicago and observed a man standing before a little building with a bared head, acting, as the cop thought, a little different. Either sick or drunk, he figured. And he eyed the man suspiciously. He walked up to where the man stood with him, and he says, what's the matter, Mac? Sick? The man opened his eyes and smiled. No, officer, my name is Billy Sunday. And I was converted right here in that little mission. I never come by here that I don't take off my hat and say a prayer. The policeman grinned. He said, I know all about you. You stay there as long as you want. I'll keep everybody else away from you. What memorials do you have? Had somebody the other day remind me, the Heritage Center is a memorial. It's just amazing. We've got them all over the place. We need to remember what God has done. In your home, there ought to be memorials. God gave us that. God did that. God delivered that person. That family is because God used us. It was a miracle. There ought to be memorials that we can tell for generations that our God is on the move. So folks, our God protects. He'll take care of us. And he'll do it as he leads us into the wilderness and into impossible situations. If we'll walk by faith, we got to not be afraid of the difficult spots, because that's where God's going to grow us and that's where God's going to deliver us. Let's bow for prayer.